is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, and glad to be here in the studio with my engineer, Aladdin Al-Qatari. I hope you are safe and warm, and thanks for listening. Besides lacking my usual co-host, Paul Wearson, this is an unusual day for Local Talk Wednesday because our usual 7 p.m. rebroadcast will be preempted by a live broadcast for Pentorium sessions. That means if you are hearing this at 7 a.m. or noon, you can either come down to the Pentorium at 7 p.m. for a live concert with Randy Burke and the Prisoners or listen in on the radio. For a preview, we'll open the show with Greta Anderson.
I've got Randy Burke on the line, and Randy is going to perform for us on Wednesday night as part of our Pentorium sessions, which are live broadcasts and live performances. The studio audience is welcome. So it's always a good time to have people in and see musicians kind of in the flesh without all of the clutter and clatter of a bar or other setting that might distract from the music. We can really focus in and see what you're all about. So tell us what you're all about, Randy Burke.
Well, first of all, I'm really excited for this show. You actually hit the nail right on the head. It's, you know, because we play so many clubs and bars and whatnot. You know, we have good crowds and stuff, but it's never where people are really listening to your craft, listening to your art, your words, you know, your music. And I've done this before, and people have came to my shows. They just see it. They see the songs and the performance in a whole different light when you're not competing against a crowd, you know, people talking and things like that. But I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, we are too. And you mentioned your craft. You do write all your own songs. Your country sounding to me with that sort of, I don't know, is it bass or baritone voice and guitar that has those country sounds to it. We've got references to beer and trucks and all of the good stuff that country musicians talk about. How do you situate yourself in the country music scene, past, present, and future?
Well, you know, it's hard these days, right, to classify genres because everything's, you know, in the last 15 years or so, everything's just kind of crossed over. You know, what you think is country isn't, and what you think a pop song is on country station. And so it's, but I like to think we're, you know, I'm a country artist, Americana, you know, little red dirt, influenced
red
by the blues,
here in Iowa. It's black here in Iowa, black dirt.
right. Well, red dirt, you know, that genre's down through Oklahoma.
Oh, gotcha.
So they call that, a lot of those artists that come out of Oklahoma and North Texas, and you know, they call that red dirt music. But you know,
they call it soil up here.
soil music. When it comes down to it, I'm a country artist.
Yeah, and you know, you grew up in Atlantic Iowa. Give us a mental picture of Atlantic Iowa and the place where you grew up.
Well, right now, the mental picture is just white.
Yeah, true.
You know, foot and feet of snow, but it's a small town. It's off the interstate, just under 8,000 people, and I was born and raised here, and then I left. I lived in southern Missouri and Nashville, but I ended up back here in Des Moines and then ran the band in Des Moines, living in Des Moines, and then I moved back over here. And the band's based out of Des Moines, but I'm living, you know, physically live over here in Atlantic. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why'd you do that? Why'd you go back?
Oh, because I had a son, and, you know, this is where he lives, and it's where I wanted to be.
Right.
And it's just an hour away, maybe.
Were you a town kid or a farm kid growing up?
Yeah, I was a town kid.
A townie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And what was the big thing in town there in Atlantic?
A big thing in town. I don't know why I just thought of this, but as I was growing up, people still cruised.
Okay.
They cruised up and down Main Street. And I was always so excited to do that. And then by the time I got to high school, they quit doing that.
Passé.
People quit cruising. And so I was really sad. I don't know.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know why that came to mind, but
What kind of car did you drive?
I had a Buick Regal, a 78 Buick Regal, baby blue with T-tops.
No wonder you wanted to cruise.
Yeah, I did want to cruise it, but it was not cool to do that anymore.
And establishments in town, you know, when you started to play, where were your first places you could perform?
For me, everything started at the First Assembly of God Church in Atlanta, or the gospel music they sang. And then from there, my dad, he had these Elvis Presley 8-tracks, and he would put those in. And there was one song one day he played. It was called the song called Lottie Miss Claudie, and that was it for me. That's all I wanted.
Lottie Miss Claudie.
Yeah, and so
is Lottie like Lordy?
I never have, you know, hit the Wikipedia on that and seen what exactly is, but I don't know for sure, but it's not Lordy, it's Lottie. Uh-huh. Maybe it is. I don't know. I gotta check now.
It's sort of like Good Golly Miss Molly.
Yeah, I've never checked. I'm gonna do that right when we hang up.
Okay. that's a kind of an odd one to really get hooked on, I would think.
Well, it was a 70s version where he was in concert. He had the you know, the full orchestra and the backup singers, and it's actually very gospel rhythm and blues sounding, and it just was a really, for me, obviously really powerful, because it was the spark that, you know, with the gospel music, and that's what did it for me. So
wow. Okay.
But I didn't start playing guitar until I was I graduated and moved to Southern Missouri to work for my dad, and that's when I started learning guitar and getting into bands and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Started songwriting a few years later after that, even. So I was late.
All right.
Kind of a late.
And the dirt is more red down there.
Yeah, if it is.
Okay. talk about going to Nashville. This was after you had probably gained some confidence as a songwriter and performer, and you wanted to see how you stood up against the competition. Am I right?
No. Actually, it's the exact opposite of that.
Oh, really?
My dad's company is a construction company, and back when Branson, Missouri was booming, and there was really cool people there like Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson,
uh-huh.
Johnny Cash was going to have a theater, and my dad's company was building it.
Wow.
And through those channels, I met a guy named Jimmy Tittle, and Jimmy was married to Kathy Cash, and that's how I got to meet John, you know, the few times I did. And Jimmy was John's bass player, you know, for some Grammy award-winning albums, and with Merle Haggard, and he's the one that taught me how to write a good song.
Wow.
Yeah. So
Jimmy, the bass player for Johnny Cash, taught you how to write.
Yeah. Well, he was more of the bass player for Merle Haggard.
Merle Haggard.
Yeah, but he was married to Johnny's daughter.
Uh-huh.
And but see, in this theater, I had auditioned to be in this afternoon show, and that's how I met Jimmy, because he was, you know, kind of. He was in there, and we hit it off, and he said, so we started hanging out, and, you know, I didn't really, Jimmy Tittle was how I found my style and how I kind of learned how to write a song, and was a huge, huge influence, maybe the most important.
We're going to hear that sound in a moment here, but this is a very interesting story. So you were auditioning for an afternoon show in a theater in Branson that belonged to Johnny Cash.
It was going to be the Johnny Cash Theater.
And
it never opened.
Oh.
Because whatever happened down there in Branson, they all split. Like, Willie left and Merle left, and Johnny said, well, I'm not going there then. So it never opened, but I had met Jimmy, and so Jimmy and Kathy moved back to Nashville, and that's when I started going to Nashville. But when I first went there, I had never really wrote a good song. I didn't know, you know, hadn't really found my own style, you know, and so
yeah.
I really learned a lot, you know.
Oh my goodness. How interesting.
So it's kind of the opposite.
It's the opposite. You went, you followed your mentor to Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he showed you the ropes.
Right. But it was, the experience was amazing because, you know, I found myself, my musical self and my musical soul in that time period.
And that was Randy Burke of Atlantic, Iowa, talking about how he learned to write songs from Jimmy Tittle of Merle Haggard's band and Johnny Cash's son-in-law. Randy Burke and the Prisoners will be our guests tonight, Wednesday night, February 27th, at the Pantorium Sessions. They will be playing live at 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., and we'll be broadcasting that, and you are welcome to come down to the studio. Our front window stage will be full of musicians, talented musicians from Des Moines that Randy Burke brings with him, including Dave Ducharme-Jones on lead guitar, Jimmy Stevens on drums, and Nate Runkel on bass, and all of them sing as well. So exciting stuff for tonight, 7 to 8 p.m. Please come down and join us, or tune in to 89.1 KHOI-FM, KHOIFM.org, live streaming. That's the Pantorium Sessions at 7 p.m. Now let's listen to a track by Randy Burke and the Prisoners.
Light slaps my face, I feel you on the wind. Your eyes burn me down, your fingers melt my skin. My feet hit the ground, my muscles ache, and I curse the hands of time. Every day away from you's a week, and I'm starting to lose my mind. That's when I take a deep breath and I play Emily. That's when the clouds lift and that red dirt girl gets me through. When the beer ain't cold, the sky ain't blue, I play Emily. Train whistle cuts through the night, ice rattles round in my glass. I look for tomorrow, but I can't let go of the past. When sleep just won't come around, and the worry of the day won't leave. When all the knots won't come unwound, I got nothing left up my sleeve. That's when I take a deep breath and I play Emily. That's when the clouds lift and that red dirt girl gets me through. When the beer ain't cold, the sky ain't blue, the road is long and the smiles are few, that's when I play Emily. Beer ain't cold, the sky ain't blue, the road is long and the smiles are few. That's when I play Emily. That's when I play Emily.
Thanks, Greta.
For those who just tuned in, that was an interview with Greta Anderson and Randy Burke. Randy Burke and the Pioneers, whose song you just heard, will be playing tonight at the Pantorium for the Pantorium Session, a live concert right here in the Pantorium for 10 Douglas, and also live on the radio instead of local talk. So we need to move on with our rest of our program for the morning. We will start with a report of an event put on at the Ames Public Library, sponsored by several community groups. The topic, Using the Courts to Kickstart Climate Action, Can Children Show Us a Direct Path Forward? Presented by Channing Dutton, attorney, represented the Iowa youth in the 2013 climate court case. Local talk reporter C.C. Iverson and I came in a few minutes early to get an interview with the organizer, Channing Dutton. Let's listen in.
Can you tell me a little bit of what is going on here today?
Well, tonight here at the Ames Public Library, I'm doing a presentation about climate change and how climate change has worked its way into the court system. But it's really a description of how a lawyer like me got involved in really not paying much attention to the atmosphere, to being radically alarmed about where we're headed and the challenges that are awaiting our children and grandchildren. Because what I'm going to say tonight is these challenges are immense and we're just about out of time.
What can we do about our dependency on a fuel like ethanol?
Ethanol seemed like a really great idea, but it's kind of like, you know, the Trojan horse, you know. Fossil fuels are the perfect vehicle that delivers so much energy and so much power and allows societies to advance. But what we've learned is that hidden inside that Trojan horse is an enemy that can kill us all. And so things like ethanol have certainly met their purpose, and they may still have a purpose in the very short future, but they don't have a long purpose in the future if we want to preserve the life that we've known for our children and grandchildren.
Right. So what are the environmental impacts that the lifestyle that we have now can't really cause the damage for our children? Like, can you tell me a little bit of detail? What is the things that you are most passionate about?
Well, for me right now, it's engaging with the politicians, because I was uniquely situated. You know, we have all of these Democratic candidates running around the state looking to meet voters. And so what really motivates me here tonight, and one of my messages to the audience tonight, is we can't sit back and wait for somebody else to approach these candidates and to say, you know, we care about issues like choice and equality. We care about security. We care about migration. We care about these matters. But if we ignore the role that climate change is playing in spiking these concerns and making everything worse, then it'll do us no good to have the world's greatest health care if we've melted down our economy and the way to pay for it. And it does us no good to have the world's strongest military if our daughters and sons are traveling all over the planet fighting water wars or oil wars to try to keep us in a fossil fuel state of mind. So our challenges are to find a way forward that allows us to quickly and aggressively transition away from what I grew up with into really a new structure and a new society. And
do you think the older generation, who are so used to having things be a certain way, will be willing to change?
I'm a guy 64 years old, but I am firmly committed to the idea we have to fundamentally shift gears, just about like we did in December of 1941 when World War II started for the United States. You know, we need to get on a war footing, and we need to transition away from what we used to think was normal and create a really a better society going forward.
Costa Rica recently banned plasticware. Do you think we can follow on these radical views or in actions in support of Mother Earth?
Well, there's a struggle going on, you know, and so the idea of, you know, something as simple as, can we move away from plastic sacks? Can we move away from plastic wares? You know, sometimes there's nuances there. Perhaps innovation allows us to, you know, I'm doing open quotes here or air quotes, but to keep some aspects of that, but we have to redesign what the product is. We have to redesign what the life of the product is. We have to look at what the CO2 cost is of those products. And so not only can we follow, but we must follow. We have to go that way. You know, the handwriting is on the wall, and we're just like, you know, the ostrich with our head in the sand right now. We just aren't willing to really wake up and say, it's time for a change. And we can do it. You know, I'm 64. My dad was a World War II veteran. And my father was a car guy. He loved cars. And he said, you know, Channing, if you would have told the people of the United States on December 6th, Saturday, December 6th, 1941, that within a month they wouldn't be able to buy a new car, or that they wouldn't be able to sell a new car, it would have been, you would have been just laughed right in your face. And the car dealerships would have said, absolutely no way. You know, they would have resisted that with every ounce and fiber. And yet on January 1, 1942, we enacted a law that said you cannot buy a new car. And on January 15, 1942, we took all the new cars off the parking lots or off the car lots in the entire country because they now belong to the military. And so we found a way to restructure so many aspects of how we did business. You know, the vegan lifestyle, the vegetarian lifestyle took a big step forward because people would not eat meat in support of the war effort. And so we're resilient, but we're kind of like a stubborn mule. We got to get hit, you know, between the eyes, 50 times by the atmosphere. But once we get hit enough, I think we're going to act. At least that's my prayer.
What can we do to inspire this upcoming generation?
Get out of your chair. Get on your feet. Go talk to these politicians, from dog catcher to candidate for the presidency of the United States, and demand action. You know, today is February 25th. 2 days ago, some 10-year-olds confronted Senator Dianne Feinstein in California. And she is powerful. She's been in the Senate during this entire time where we have been warned to act on climate and to make things happen. And her condescending, trite attitude towards those children who are begging her to take action speaks volumes to the old way that we think about things, and really kind of lays down a marker. We can't continue on this way. So my request to the young people particularly is stand up, get on the barricades, sound the horn, put the pedal to the metal. Let's do something.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
But this is Greta Thunberg. She is a young woman, 16 years old, from Sweden. And she was invited because of the efforts that she has been undertaking to speak at the climate summit in Poland. And Greta shames me and inspires me every time I watch this.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I am 15 years old and I'm from Sweden. I speak on behalf of climate justice now. Many people say that Sweden is just a small country and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to. But to do that, we have to speak clearly, no matter how uncomfortable that may be. You only speak of green, eternal economic growth because you are too scared of being unpopular. You only talk about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is pull the emergency brake. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. But I don't care about being popular. I care about climate justice and a living planet. Our civilization is being sacrificed for the opportunity of a very small number of people to continue making enormous amounts of money. Our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few. The year 2078, I will celebrate my 75th birthday. If I have children, maybe they will spend that day with me. Maybe they will ask me about you. Maybe they will ask why you didn't do anything while there still was time to act. You say you love your children above all else, and yet you are stealing their future in front of their very eyes. Until you start focusing on what needs to be done rather than what is politically possible, there is no hope. We cannot solve a crisis without treating it as a crisis. We need to keep the fossil fuels in the ground, and we need to focus on equity. And if solutions within this system are so impossible to find, then maybe we should change the system itself. We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past, and you will ignore us again. We have run out of excuses, and we are running out of time. We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power belongs to the people. Thank you.
Greta has inspired an entire movement, which is very powerful in Europe right now. It's just reached England, and on March 15th, it's coming to the United States. And it's called the Climate Strike. And so what Greta started doing is she started not going to school on Fridays. And she would go and sit in front of the Swedish Parliament with a sign saying, climate action, act on climate, do something. And now thousands of students take to the streets in Europe. Now, our media won't report that here. But in England, it started off pretty good response, actually, because the youth organize it. The youth make it happen. They call for the strike. And the strike is coming to the United States, and it's going to be repeated every 2 weeks. Strike again, strike again, strike again. Because this is the way those without power have their only tool to speak to power.
And after hearing what Channing Dutton had to say about the strike and how powerful it has been in Europe, I learned that it is coming to America, and the date is March 15th. In order to learn what was happening in Ames, I contacted Lucas Bliley, who regular listeners may remember was a leader of the students petitioning the city council and the school board to take action on climate change. And this is what he told me. ISU is having a walkout. Students at Ames High are planning a small walkout during one period during the day of the strike. ISU is doing something on a par with the big high school walkout last year in the March for Our Lives. In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. We've been listening to an interview with climate activist Channing Dutton and a group of other people speaking with him, followed by excerpts from the presentation, Using the Courts to Kickstart Climate Action. Can Children Show Us a Direct Path Forward? The rest of the program will be devoted to a few of the many events coming up this week here in central Iowa. Right here in the studio at 3 p.m. today, our operations manager, Evan Taylor, will host his weekly show, Behind the Boards, by featuring the recordings being released this Saturday by Nova Labs here in Ames. Listen in for some live local music with Mark Bailey. Evan will also be engineering the live broadcast of tonight's Pantorium session with Randy Burke and the Park Prisoners, a four-piece band playing Americana. This will be at 7 p.m., preempting the usual 7 p.m. local talk. And tomorrow night, Thursday, February 28th, Jim Kopic, an Ames favorite, will be playing for another Pantorium session. It's going to be a pretty intense musical week here at KHOI. This, over in Story City, The Roland Story Spring Musical will be The Wizard of Oz, playing Friday and Saturday nights, March 1st and 2nd at 7 p.m. And a reminder, Play With Words, This is America, will take place in the Celebrity Cafe, located on the ground floor of Stevens Auditorium at 1900 Center Drive, Ames, Iowa. Performances are Friday, March 1st at 7:30 p.m., Saturday, March 2nd at 2 p.m., and Sunday, March 3rd at 2 p.m. Last week, we talked with Carol Horowitz about this collaboration between the Ames Public Library, Children's Theater, and the Iowa State Center. Another thing that we announced last week is the Central Iowa Symphony Young Artist Concert. This week, we have an interview with Central Iowa Symphony's music director, Eric McIntyre, from Grinnell College, who teaches music composition courses and directs the Grinnell Symphony. He'll tell us more about the music that audiences will hear on Sunday, March 3rd, at 3 p.m. at the Ames City Auditorium. How did you select the pieces that were going to be performed by the choir and by the two soloists?
Over the last several years, in addition to our young artist soloists, we have had collaborations with school ensembles and other organizations made up of young musicians in the area. And so in this case, I was recommended the Gilbert High School Choir, and I spoke to their director, and also I had received some recommendations from members of our board for pieces that they thought might be good for a choir of this age and experience that would work well with the orchestra. And the idea of Schubert's Mass in G major came up several times. And so when I spoke to Karen Rogers, who's the director of the Gilbert High School Choir, she recommended that one. And it fits very well. It works well for young voices, and yet it's a degree of sophistication that's just fantastic for everybody. And better yet, in the theme of a young artist concert, this is a work that was written by an 18-year-old composer.
Really?
So it fits well with the theme, yes. Which, for Schubert, as I say, he was more than halfway to being dead at this point, since he lived such a short life. He was a very well-developed composer by the age of 18. As for the young artists, what happens is every year in January, we hold auditions, and the young artists come from really all over the state, and the age limit is up through high school for instrumentalists and up through undergraduate college for vocalists. And I believe this year we had 9 entrants, and we hear all of the auditions, and then I have a panel of judges, and we consider all of the performances and decide performers we want to have perform with the orchestra. And so their works that they perform are selected by them because what they play on the audition is what they'll play with the orchestra. So this year, of the 9, we selected 2 to perform with the orchestra. Helen Mao is performing the first movement of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 23, and Yihun Shin is performing the Sarasate's Zigeunerweisen, or the Gypsy Airs.
You pointed out that Schubert was only 18 when he wrote the Mass that's being performed. How old was Mozart when he wrote this concerto that Helen Mao is playing?
Actually, I don't recall off the top of my head how old he was, but again, having lived such a short life, this was everything that Mozart wrote was youthful. But this is it's not an early work. It's a little bit later in his career. And obviously, he's written 22 piano concertos prior to this one. This is one that's really, it's the work of the mature Mozart.
But Helen Mao is the age that Mozart was performing, right?
Yes. Well, she began very young at the age of 5, which would Mozart had been playing for a while at that point. But she is currently only in 6th grade, so she is, like Mozart, a very accomplished young musician.
Let's talk about Yehu Shin now. What can you tell us about the piece that he chose, Zigeunerweisen?
A lot of people will recognize this work. It's a fun piece. It's a real showpiece for the violin. It's like just a museum of technique for the violin. There's the fast, there's the slow, there's the dramatic, there's the humorous. And with this titled, which translates roughly as Gypsy Airs, It's capturing gypsy fiddle style playing, and as I mentioned, there are melodies in there that almost anybody will recognize, especially if they grew up watching old cartoons, because some of it gets used in cartoons.
Well, that's good for children.
Yes, yeah, it's a real showpiece. There's a lot of fireworks,
and maybe not a lot of their parents will recognize them from earlier years.
Sure. Yeah.
The composer is certainly not as well known as either Schubert or Mozart. Can you tell us anything about him?
Sarasate is a violin virtuoso. So again, this is a piece that's designed to show off his technique and his skills. He was definitely a renowned composer, but as a virtuoso violinist, he made a big splash. And it's something we should keep in mind when we hear things like the Mozart Concerto or like the Zauberweisen. These were works that not only were intended for an audience to enjoy listening and for the orchestra to play, but for the composer to show off his skill and his technique. So Mozart, for the 23rd Piano Concerto, is showing off what Mozart could do as a pianist, and Sarasate with the Zauberweisen is showing off what he could do as a violinist. So we have a sort of a lens into what their skills were, despite the case, especially with Mozart, that we don't know what he sounded like, but we can tell from the score what his abilities were.
You did choose one piece that is not a concerto, is that right?
Yes, so we have the Schubert Mass begins the program, and then we have the two soloists, and then this is the part that's always fun for me as the conductor and the music director. After we program the concert and we hear the soloists, then we know what actually is going to be on the program, and I'm usually left with one spot to put on something for the orchestra alone. And in this case, I decided that I wanted something that was different from the other works, and something that the orchestra hasn't played before. And then when it comes down to some of the basic logistics and practical issues, all the other works on the program called for essentially a smaller orchestra, so I wanted to use something that used the full ensemble. And that's how I came up with programming Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet Overture Fantasy, which is a fantastic work, and it's got something for everybody. And better yet, it's also, after I programmed it, then I looked down and saw, hey, wait a minute, and this is also dealing with a young people's concert. It's about young lovers. So it also fits into the whole theme of youth.
I have one more question about rehearsals. How many times can you rehearse with the choir and the two soloists?
So in this case, with the soloists, usually they have one working rehearsal with the orchestra where they come in and we actually have time to go over things. And then other than that, they have a dress rehearsal the day before the performance where we essentially run it and make sure everything's in good shape. So it's on two rehearsals. And with the choir, they've been rehearsing it with their director. And one time I went in and worked with them at Gilbert High School during their school day to rehearse with the choirs. And we were supposed to have two rehearsals with the choir before the dress rehearsal, but one of them got snowed out. So with the choir, we've had one rehearsal and we have another one during the dress rehearsal. So again, it seems like everybody's got two rehearsals with the orchestra.
Well, that makes it even more exciting when you hear the performance because it's fresher.
Yes, and we know that everybody's got to be really on game and in good form. And, of course, all of the performers for this concert are well prepared before we get together with them, and that makes it much easier for everybody because we all know our parts when we get together.
One more thing. Please tell our listeners about what's available before the concert.
Yes, we have our concert conversations that I give in the hall, beginning 45 minutes before the program. So in this case, the program starts at 3 o'clock, so it will be at 2:15. And that gives me a chance to introduce the works, put them in context, and what I like to look at it is an opportunity for people to learn about ways they might approach the music and hopefully not just historical information, but ways to make it an active experience where the listener becomes even more engaged and develops even better listening skills for the program.
Thank you. This is KHOI Community Radio, and in our shows today, in addition to featuring music, we have featured children throughout, even in the announcements, if you've noticed. And this is also true for the event taking place next week on Monday, November 4th, when the Committee on Lectures and Chabad of Ames will sponsor a lecture, The Holocaust Through the Eyes of a Child Survivor, by Inga Auerbacher, Monday, March 4th at 6 p.m. This is an unusual time. It's from 6 to 8 at the ISU Memorial Union Great Hall. And we have with us Rabbi Lebo Jacobson, the Chabad rabbi in Ames, and Malka Jacobson, who's smiling and may break in. But
well, good morning.
Good morning and welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
You, I believe, are responsible for contacting Dr. Auerbacher?
Yes, we had from our student Jewish organization on campus that they had the idea of bringing down a Holocaust survivor, and we said let's make it work. So we're bringing down Inga Auerbacher, and like you said, this coming Monday, March 4th, and it's going to be hopefully going to be a packed event and educational event as well.
Well, certainly, I think will be educational for especially people of this current generation who may never have met a Holocaust survivor before, and there are not many left.
Correct. There are not that many left, especially here in Iowa. There's two or three that are still here with us, and we're looking forward to bringing her down.
Let me ask you who the sponsors are, because you indicated that in addition to the Committee on Lectures and Chabad, there are several others. Do you want to acknowledge them?
Yes. There's the Iowa State University Department of History. That's our co-sponsors. Philosophy and Religious Studies at ISU. And Committee on Lectures, which is funded by the student government at Iowa State. As well as CLS Living, which is the Madison and the Foundry. It's a real estate company here in town. They're also co-sponsoring, as well as Virgie's Coffee, Best Western Plus, that are helping as co-sponsors.
Oh, so after she agreed to come, then was when you got your co-sponsors.
Exactly. That took a little bit of time, but we got through. We got it done. And it's just very exciting to be able to do this and have at no cost.
As are all lectures at ISU.
Correct.
This is I don't know how many people who aren't students are aware that we have these fantastic lectures throughout the year on every subject, and they are always open to not just students but to anyone who wants to come.
Right, to the general public. And some people have been actually asking, does the program cost to come to? How does it work? Do I have to pay? And some of these people are actually living in an area. So,
no, but we don't usually talk about costs on KHOI, but I think in general this is something that the community should be aware of, that this wonderful opportunity, these many wonderful opportunities exist for us. But to get back to Dr. Auerbacher, I believe that earlier this year she spoke at the UN. Could you tell us a little about that occasion? You actually heard the speech.
Well, when we had spoken to her a couple months back, she actually had told us that she would be speaking at the UN, and she was very excited about it. And she was only given a 5-minute time slot to speak, and she actually went over that 5-minute time period. But one of the things she said at the end was, "My hope, wish, and prayer is for every child to live in peace without hunger and prejudice. The antidote to hatred is education. No more genocides, no more anti-Semitism," and then she ended off there. That was what she last said at the UN.
Yes, and I think that is the message. It's no more prejudice, no more hate, and no more destruction. I listened to an interview of her life, and I found her story fascinating, and I hope to be able to hear this on Monday night and to inspire some of our listeners to be interested anyway. But one of the things that was amazing to me was that she kept two things from going to Theresian. This Theresian, she actually came from the southwestern part of Germany, very near the Swiss and French borders, in the little town of 2000. She was able to keep her doll. This is a four-year-old girl when this all began for her. And she also kept the yellow star. She said we were actually forced to pay for the yellow stars that we had to have on our clothing. But she was able to keep this yellow star, and she still has it. And she wrote a poem about that. I think from the tone of the poem, she probably wrote it when she was a child. And could you play that?
I'm a star. Only special children wear a star. I've noticed from near and far, they have placed a mark over my heart. I'll wear it proudly from the start. A star's a reward, so I've been told. This custom passed on from days of old. I know all that the star's revealing, but I'll try to have a better feeling. I am a star. Papa told me to avoid trouble, come home from school on the double. To me, the star's yellow is gold. I'll try not to act so bold. I stand tall and proud. My voice shouts in silence loud. I'm a real person still. No one can break my spirit or will. I am a star.
And that is the title of one of her several books about different aspects of her life. I Am a Star, Child of the Holocaust was her first. And Beyond the Yellow Star to America is the second. And her third, which sounds like it is about a scientist, Finding Dr. Schatz, the discovery of streptomycin and the life it saved. The life it saved was hers. And if you come tonight, you'll find out how that happened and how she lived out that incredible optimism and spirit that you can see in this child who wrote this poem.
It's unbelievable. And you mentioned before about where she was born. She was actually born in Kippenheim, Germany. So I'm not sure what part of the Germany that was.
Oh, yeah. It's in the southwest corner, as I mentioned. And she described – you can hear it from her, so I won't tell what she described. It's an incredible story, though. And she also, when she came to the United States, she still was high school age. She graduated from high school in New York City, in Brooklyn, I guess, and went to university and received a doctorate in chemistry and was a chemist for – her professional career, as well as writing several books. Incidentally, you told me one of them will be for sale, very modest price. I think that's I Am a Star.
Yeah, correct. Star. There will be her book, I Am a Star, will be for sale.
So is there anything else that you would like to have people know before Monday evening?
I think this is a program that everybody – not only are they welcome to come, but they should come, as it's educational, it's history, and it's to learn about, to hear her story, and to learn the lessons and to implement them in your own life, and to teach it to this generation, because believe it or not, sooner or later, the survivors are not going to be here anymore. And so now's the time to get on it, jump on the bandwagon, and hear their stories and meet them face to face, not over a hologram
or in a movie.
Or in a movie, exactly. The event is going to be Monday, March 4th, 6 p.m. at the ISU Memorial Union Great Hall.
Okay, you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. I'm Susan Franzen, your host today. Other voices you heard were reporter Cece Iverson, Greta Thunberg, Channing Dutton, Eric McIntyre, and Label Jacobson, as well as Greta Anderson. You can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin Al-Qatari. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was the theme from Romeo and Juliet Overture Fantasy by Tchaikovsky and Emilou by Randy Burke and the Prisoners, who will be performing live at 7 p.m. tonight at the Pentorium. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878, or stop in at the Pentorium, 410 Douglas. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Check out the music of Randy Burke, our next Pentorium Sessions artist.
Same stretch of road, same set of wheels, where you drove me head over heels back then. I want to drive again.
Randy Burke and the Prisoners will be bringing their tunes to the KHOI Front Window stage this Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m. sharp. Come see this free live performance or listen live to the action at khoifm.org. KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM.
And I need you.